Okay, everybody, I think we're ready to get going this afternoon. Hope the general session was good. My name's Carrie Baldwin. I am the Chief Revenue Officer for Bluebird Strategies, and I am here to introduce one of my favorite people in the world. Nick Ezzo is the VP of Demand Generation for Host Analytics. See, I don't even need a script for this one, Nick. And he hails from Cleveland, Ohio. There's a lot of people from Ohio here, I know. Everyone bragging about the 65-degree weather. Where I'm from, it was snowing as I left. So Nick is also an instructor for a digital marketing course that he and I and a bunch of people in the industry do together, bridging the gap between what education teaches our students and what the skills that are needed in the real world. It's called Ben Poly, if you're ever looking. So Nick is going to guide us today on an end-to-end journey to successful ABM. He's definitely got a lot of cool things that he's doing at Host Analytics, and I'm excited to have him share it with you. So welcome, Nick. Thank you.
All right, thank you, guys. Awesome. So I know this is the after lunch crowd, and everybody's kind of in the coma. You know, it's boring, it's afternoon, we're all getting tired. So I'm going to try to liven things up a bit, maybe make it more entertaining than informative. I can't promise you you'll learn anything, but hopefully you will be entertained. So now I'm going to press the clicker button and see what happens. All right, cool. For the next 30 minutes, I'm going to talk about end-to-end strategy for ABM success. But before I do that, I want to kind of gauge the room and find out who my audience is. Raise your hand if you know who these four guys are. Anybody? Shout it out. Zeppelin, all right. It's not the Beatles. It's not the Who. Yes, it's Led Zeppelin. Why do I bring that up? I'm glad you asked. Because in 1971, Led Zeppelin was a band that was hated by the music critics, despised by other bands. They never got their due respect. And they decided to do something a little different in marketing. And they put out their untitled fourth album. Some people call it Led Zeppelin 4. Some people call it the Symbols album or the Runes album or whatever. But it really has no title. It's an album with no title. In fact, there's no words on the cover at all. No album title, no band name. In fact, they got away with not even putting the catalog number on the spine of the records, which in those days was unheard of. They didn't release any singles from the album, despite the fact that their most well-known song, Stairway to Heaven, is on that album. They put their foot down and they said, Atlantic Records, we are not releasing a single off this. They made it really, really hard for people to acquire this album. What was the end result? They sold over 37 million copies, and to this day, it's gone platinum 23 times. So what does this have to do with anything about marketing or account-based marketing? Nothing. I just want to talk about my favorite band, Led Zeppelin. And wake you up a little bit. So the purpose, remember the purpose of marketing is as I see it, and I'm not a marketing expert, but I will tell you that I tend to think that, let's say for example, 10% of the people in your audience, in your market, are ready to buy right now. All you have to do is pick up the phone, get them on the phone, they're gonna buy. 20% of the people are never gonna buy. They don't like your name, they don't like your company, they don't like your logo, they don't like your CEO, they're never gonna buy. What that leaves is 70% of the people, and I'm using these numbers for illustrative purposes, 70% of the people will buy from you one day, but just not right now. And so we need to nurture those people, and we need to stay top of mind, and we need to have these interactions in that fat middle right there. 75 years ago, Coca-Cola had an internal initiative that they called Within an Arm's Reach of Desire. Within an Arm's Reach of Desire, what does that mean? That means, as a marketer, the way I interpret this is, no amount of advertising, no amount of commercials or billboards or magazines will ever make you thirsty. But one day you will be thirsty, and they want you to reach for a Coke, and they want a Coke to be within an arm's reach of desire. And that informs their branding strategy and their awareness strategy and their distribution strategy. In fact, they want a Coca-Cola to be in every restaurant, in every refrigerator, in every kitchen. So I don't sell sugary water. I sell finance applications to CFOs, completely different thing. So I can't make somebody buy what I'm selling. But what I can do is I can stay in front of them until they become so thirsty for what I'm selling that they say, okay, enough. I need Host Analytics. I'm gonna reach for Host Analytics. So that's the way I consider marketing, and that's why I use the Coca-Cola example here. So that's kind of framing things what we're all here for. So, Schoolhouse Rock. Okay, this is a little segment that I call how a lead or account becomes an opportunity. As Carrie mentioned, I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. Who else here is from Ohio? one person. They were much louder earlier during the intro. Okay. But when I was a kid growing up in Cleveland, Ohio, suburb of Cleveland, my favorite time of the week was Saturday morning. Because Saturday morning, I could race downstairs with my jammies on, slide in front of the TV, and I could watch cartoons. And in between the cartoons, there were commercials for crappy toys and sugary cereals. And in between the commercials for crappy toys and sugary cereals, there was something called Schoolhouse Rock. And that's the way I pretty much got my education, being a product of the public school system. I learned about nouns and verbs and adjectives and conjunctions. I know, right? I know you're all singing it in your head, you know. Lolly, 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 get your adverbs here. But the other thing I learned was, I learned about this guy right here, this dude. He's Bill. I'm actually calling him Lead here. But he's Bill, and Bill wanted to become a law. And you know, they went through this whole thing. He's just a Bill, and he's sitting there on Capitol Hill, and he wants to be a law. And so the reason I talk about this is that I have to explain what I do to the executives of my company, and it's very important to use small words and very simple concepts to explain what we do. So when my finance team says, Nick, what the hell do you guys do over there in demand gen? It's like, look, we help this guy become an opportunity. So this guy, Mr. Lead, will become an opportunity. So first, let me talk about the inbound flow. At Host Analytics, we've got lots of different ways that leads come in. They come in through our digital channels. They come in through our events and our seminars and trade shows and breakfasts and lunches and thought leadership dinners. We have programs. We have webinars, both internal and external. We have our weekly live demo. We buy leads. We purchase leads from ZoomInfo and InsideView and DiscoverOrg and RainKing. We pull all these things into our system. If it's somebody who's responding to a campaign, then they go through our lead enrichment process in Marketo. After they get enriched, they get scored, both demographic and firmographic scoring using Infer, as well as behavioral using Marketo. And then at the end, we either send them to an SDR who qualifies them, takes a look, okay, can I make something out of this? If so, okay, you know, am I gonna be an opportunity one day? Maybe, come on, Mr. Lead. If not, they go into our nurture programs and they sit there and cycle around over and over again until one day they're thirsty enough and they're ready to buy. So, why do I talk about that? Just to give you an example, but this is not an inbound presentation, right? This is not inbound 2017. That's on the East Coast, and that's later in the year. This is a demand gen conference, and we're talking about ABM here. So let's talk about account-based marketing. I'll pause and say that although ABM seems to be a new concept, what we've heard over and over again this week, and you'll continue to hear it, is ABM is not a new concept. 10 years ago, we were calling it target account marketing, or whale hunting. A couple people here knew me 10 years ago when we were whale hunting. And in previous companies, I worked in a company 10 years ago where we as a company sold to 20 accounts. We cared about 20 whales. Not 21, not 25, not 30, but 20 accounts. And if we won one, we take that off the list, we put a new one in. If we lose one, take it off the list, put a new one in. But it's a focus thing. And I always consider ABM to be a focused exercise. And the other thing I'll say is I've worked with salespeople my entire career. I'm married to a salesperson, so we have sales and marketing in the same household. So I'm reporting to sales both at work and at home. I don't know how that works. But there is no other kind of selling besides account-based selling. Marketing is now joining sales to the party, albeit a little bit late, and supporting them in their efforts with account-based marketing. So this is a little clever thing. I think it's clever to talk about the ABCs of ABM. So the first thing, and by the way, this is super 101. Like I said, I strive to be more entertaining than informative, but this is simple concepts that I give to my executive team. The number one thing I think is important to do is select the right accounts. It's important in every marketing activity, but particularly in ABM, where you have some expensive programs that you're running, you want to make sure you have the right accounts. The second thing, the B, is build out the contacts. Make sure that you have the right 3 to 5 contacts in my world. 3 to 5 contacts within that account that care about what you're selling. In your world, that might be 7 to 10 or 10 to 20. So get the contacts in the accounts that you care about. And then lastly, connect to those people and do it creatively. In my mind, ABM is all about creativity. What are the different ways we can get in touch with these people? So let's run through them one by one. First, let's talk about how salespeople pick accounts. So are there any salespeople in the room? If so, okay, a couple. I have to apologize in advance if I mock you. Like I said, I'm married to a salesperson, so I get it. But this is how some salespeople pick accounts. They either sold to people they sold to in the past. This is what I call the golden Rolodex. You know, I'm new at the company, and I'm going to bring my Rolodex, and I'm going to sell all this new shit to the people who bought my old shit. Oh, by the way, if anybody's offended with four-letter words or coarse language, please raise your hand. Okay, nobody? Awesome. I notice I asked that after I already cursed. The second way people pick accounts is they sell to people the last rep sold to. Yeah, it was super successful for that guy. Let's try to farm that patch. What could go wrong with that plan? Thirdly, they call people who pick up the phone. And this is, I think, one of the worst ways a salesperson can spend their time. Groucho Marx famously said, "I would never belong to a club that would have me as a member." I think if a salesperson, if somebody's going to pick up the phone and talk to you for an hour, they probably don't have the juice to make the decision to buy your product. So don't waste your time talking to people who pick up the phone. And then last but not least, and this is a true one, friends, neighbors, kids, friends, parents. Because I had a sales rep at Host Analytics say, "Hey, Nick, I got this awesome account I'm going after. My kid goes to school with another kid, and his dad's a CFO." And I was like, "That is totally awesome and totally not scalable." Unless, of course, your kid goes to school with a bunch of kids with moms and dads that are CFOs. So let's talk about a different way to pick accounts. Again, this is the A in the ABM strategy. So what we use is we use a fit model. In fact, we use two different fit models. In this case, we use all these different factors right here, like the competitors and partners and verticals and employee count and revenue and geography and all these kind of fun things to create something called an ICP, or ideal customer profile. Has anybody heard of ICP or ideal customer profile? This is basic fit stuff. So this means you look at who you've sold to in the past and who you think you should sell to, and you use the data to find companies that look like your ideal customer. This is the ideal customer profile. We at Host Analytics have over 650 customers, so we have a pretty robust ideal customer profile data set, and we can score all these accounts based on how similar or dissimilar they are to our ideal customer profile. In fact, we use, as I mentioned, two different models. One is from Spiderbook, now Demandbase, and Spiderbook looks at all those signals that I showed you and brings in a set of accounts. We also use Infer. We've been using Infer for lead scoring for years. Just recently, in the last 6 or 12 months, they started doing account scoring. And so because we have Infer and we have account scoring that came along with it, now I can take those two circles and overlap them and say, here are two different fit models, and here's where they agree, two different independently created fit models, and here's the overlap of accounts that they both agree are accounts that we should be going after. This is actually somewhat deceptive because I drew it for just illustrative purposes, but the degree of overlap between the two of those in my market is around 60 to 80%. So I thought that was interesting that two different models predicted my accounts fairly accurately and independently. My hope for 2017, and I think Mike from Bombora is here, what I really want to do is I want to take intent data and overlay intent data on top of those two different fit models and come to the best fit and intent in that little tiny place in the middle where all three data sets intersect. Those are the people that I want my sales reps going after this quarter. And that's the type of thought process that goes behind our account selection. We have sales reps who say things like, "Oh yeah, I want to go after John Deere because I love John Deere tractors." Or I had Burger King yesterday and I want to go after Burger King. Yeah, that's all fine and good. You can try to throw those in there if you want, but this is probably a better way to look at it. Once we come up with the account list, in this case, that's around, we had a superset of 1,200 accounts. We brought that down to a subset of about 600 accounts, and then I let the sales reps pick and choose which ones they don't want to go after. So you don't get to add new ones in there, but you can pull things out. Question at the end you'll probably want to ask me is, how did you get salespeople to buy into this concept of you picking accounts for them? More to come on that. All right, and then when we talk about the B in the ABCs, A is account selection, B is build out contacts. We use an application called ZenIQ. And by the way, I probably should have prefaced this by saying, this is pretty heavy on tech, and so if you're interested in our tech stack, there's a slide at the end, you may want to take a picture of it, I don't care. But we're a small marketing team, and so we rely very heavily on tech. In fact, tech is about 25% of my overall demand gen budget. ZenIQ is one that helps us understand, do we have the right accounts? That's the big circle. Do we have the right reach within those accounts? Meaning, do we have people that we can that have addressable emails, that haven't bounced, and haven't unsubscribed? And then have we engaged with those accounts within those? In a perfect world, those circles would be fairly concentric, meaning that white space is probably not good. We have some work to do to build out the accounts further, make sure that they're reachable, and also to make sure that the people are engaged. So now let's talk about the C in the ABCs. First was account selection. Second one is build out of contacts. Third one is connect and connect creatively. So what do? We use all kinds of different channels for reaching people, and this is where you can really get creative. Yes, of course, in the top of the circle, we have content drips that we do through Marketo. We have a number of nurture streams. Email marketing, as ineffective as it is, and it's been the demise of email marketing has been predicted for 10 years, it's still there, it's still used, it still has a place. We also do targeted ads. LinkedIn Lead Accelerator was a big part of our application last year. Now it's LinkedIn-sponsored updates. We use Google AdWords. Demand-based, we have an account-based advertising program running for 250 accounts where we are popping ads for the very top of our ABM list so that those people can see what we do. Swag IQ, there's a company called PFL that's in the next room over there. They send out these dimensional pieces, a dimensional piece. This is when you want to sound smart to your CEO. Is nothing more than a package that has something cool in it that gets the attention of your buyer. Why does that work? Again, with ABM, what's old is new again, right? Swag works, and I can tell you anecdotally, and I can tell you objectively how it works. But anecdotally, I can't even tell you how many times an SDR has come to me and said, Nick, I was chasing that guy down for 5 months. I sent him a $5 mug, and he returned my phone call. So it works. Why does it work? It plays on a psychological trick that we all have in our brains, the way we're wired, and it's called reciprocation. That means when I do something for you, you feel this unresolved need to do something back for me. Otherwise, you've got cognitive dissonance, this unresolved feeling, and you feel like you have to return the favor somehow. That's how we're wired. Some people are just jerks and they're never going to return the phone call. That's fine. But it works in a large number of situations where you send somebody something nice, something well thought out, handwritten card or simulated handwritten card for the folks over here at PFL, and you will get a response back more times than just emailing them. Of course, we do webinars and events through Marketo on 24 and other event partners. We do survey marketing. That's a cool one. There's a company up in the Northeast called Simply Direct. We give them our target list, our ABM list, and they guarantee me 100 responses. And those 100 responses will fill out a survey of 6 questions, and it's 6 questions that I care about. And it's 6 questions that help me and my SDR team uncover pain in the budgeting and forecasting and finance consolidation process. So those are pure gold. And why would somebody fill out a survey? In this case, like back to reciprocation, they get this awesome Columbia fleece. It's not branded Host Analytics. They just get a $50 fleece in exchange for filling out a survey. So again, surveys have been around for years. Don't forget about them. They're awesome. Of course, the SDR team, that's where the rubber hits the road. I try to be very kind to the SDR team. They don't report to me. I'm not their dad. I'm more like the fun uncle. I can give them spiffs and take them on trips and take them to Warriors games and, you know, beg and plead with them to create opportunities. So they don't report to me, but I have a lot of fun with those guys, and I love them from the bottom of my heart. And then at the top, around the circle, we have our engagement layer. You know, our website and our blog, powered by Demandbase for web forms and personalization, Uberflip, also in the next room over there. They power our resource center, HubSpot. I'm probably the only person you'll ever meet that uses both Marketo and HubSpot. Why do we do that? I'm glad you asked. HubSpot powers our blog, and I don't know if they're going to change their pricing when I tell you this, but since we only have blog subscribers in HubSpot, it's super cheap. It's only like $500 a month, and they have this kick-ass blogging application that does, it's got SEO tools, and when we publish on the blog, it goes out to my LinkedIn and my Twitter and my CEO's LinkedIn and his Twitter and our company Facebook page. So lots and lots of fun stuff going on here. So the takeaway for this 360-degree view is, this is what we do. We're gonna do more in the next year, things I haven't even thought of. You're gonna do more things that I haven't even thought of, and I'd love to hear your ideas about how to stay in touch with people. It's all about connecting and connecting creatively. All right. Moving right along, and I think this was a building slide that I have to keep pressing the button until it changes. There we go. So this is the ABM flow. This is a little bit, kind of, it looks like a sideways rocket ship, a little bit like a Rube Goldberg device we'll see in a moment here. I mentioned before account selection build out. That should say once a quarter, because we were doing this on a monthly basis. We've stretched out our ABM programs to be once a quarter instead of once a month. We don't let the sales reps discard and redraw accounts every month anymore. Now it's every 3 months. Then we kick in cookie and account-based advertising, which means that's air cover. You know, before I even do anything, I'm going to start softening up the targets by showing them ads. The way I define victory for those is, if people click, great, awesome. They click through, they engage with our content, super. But when my SDR eventually calls them and they go, yeah, Host Analytics, I've heard of you guys, I don't know what you do, but your name sounds familiar, well, that's victory for me because my ads have been following you around the internet for the last 3 months. So this is kind of the air cover part. Then we snap into action with some targeted nurture programs, targeted lead gen. We start sending things out. The SDRs snap into action. They do some dimensional marketing with Swag IQ. The SDR team, you know, goes and does all those things. And at the end of the flow, we take a look and we either resolve or we recycle them. And we, as a group, decide, do we want to keep these accounts in our ABM programs or do we want to recycle and pull them out? Okay, cool. So that, in a nutshell, was the ABCs of ABM. First was account selection, second, build out of contacts, and then finally, connect creatively. So let's talk about the marketing stack, which is not this. This is a Marshall stack made famous by Jimi Hendrix in the 1960s. But the marketing stack, we'll have plenty of times for Q&A because this is my last slide. So from the bottom, we've got all of our data sources. And this is the way I think about MarTech. Maybe it's not the way you think about it, but this is the way I consider it. Feel free to take a picture of it. I'm sure my competitors have this. For all they know, I'm a genius. I don't know. Like if this works, great. It might not work for them. So in any case, many of these vendors are in the next room. At the data source layer, I would say, we have practically every data source known to man. We've got ZoomInfo, DiscoverOrg, RainKing, InsideView, LinkedIn. We even use Netline for an account-based content syndication program. So we give Netline our ABM list, and they give us only content syndicated leads that fall into my ABM list. Kind of cool. Of course, in the middle of the stack, we're Marketo and Salesforce, probably the most used, most people, probably 80% of the people in this room are Marketo, Salesforce. At the scoring and targeting level, we use, of course, Spiderbook, Demandbase, and Infer. And then at the content engagement layer, I told you about those guys. We have WordPress and HubSpot and Uberflip. Captora we use for our long tail keywords. So we have lots of, we have about 600 or 800 organic landing pages that are out there just sucking things in from the greater World Wide Web. We have lots of paid search campaigns that we're rolling out with Captora. PFL/SwagIQ, we talked about those guys in Marketo. And at the very top is the reporting and attribution, or what you might call the measurement layer. We use Lean Data. They do some pretty awesome campaign to opportunity attributions, and so things that I would say Salesforce should have done out of the box 20 years ago, but somehow other people have to do it for them. We use, of course, Google Analytics like everybody else, and then Bizible is a company that we use for, we started using them for our paid search attribution because we can now draw a straight line between an ad on AdWords, ad campaign, ad copy, landing page, lead, conversion, an opportunity. So I can actually open up an opportunity, and if somebody says, what's phrase did they search on to come into our system, I can look right in the opportunity and Bizible will show me what was the search phrase. When did they come in? How many times did they get touched? And they do first touch, last lead conversion, opportunity creation, both U-shape and W-shape attribution. And so that's what we use. So one more thing about attribution that I will say, you might ask the question, how do you measure the success of your ABM programs? I probably should have a slide on this, but we do it in the following ways. One is account penetration. So let's say we have 100 ABM targets. Did we get engagement with 10 of them? Did we get engagement with 20 of them? Are we talking to these people? And when I talk about engagement, I mean both the breadth and depth of the interaction. The breadth meaning how many people within the company did we talk to? And by talking to, I mean interacted with on the web, had phone conversations with, they attended our webinars, they came to our live demo. So there's the breadth of the interaction, there's also the depth of interaction. How many content pieces are being consumed by the different people within those accounts? So, having said that, that is how a lead or opportunity, Mr. Bill here, Mr. Lead, becomes an opportunity. And with that, I will now open the floor for questions. All right. With the accounts that we... Oh, the ones that we cull. Okay, got it. So the question was, what do we do with the accounts that we cull from the list? So, you know, we've tried, we gave it the old college try, good shot, nobody's engaging. Let's pull them off the list and put somebody else on the list who might engage. What do we do with those people? Well, they go into an ABM kind of nurture program. So we don't ignore them, but we don't put them in the high-touch, high-value programs. Like, honestly, demand-based, account-based advertising is a very targeted, and in terms of other types of advertising, fairly expensive way to reach those accounts. I don't want to put somebody who's not engaging with us into that expensive program. Swag IQ, our friends at PFL, sending a $50 item to an account that's not engaging, probably not a smart thing. If they're not engaging, I put them in an ABM nurture program, and we come back 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, and we can also use Bombora data to figure out, are these people surging on our keywords? By the way, when I mentioned Bombora, I probably didn't mention what they do. Maybe I just assumed that people knew what intent was. It was the third circle. Remember, we have the two fit models, Spiderbook and Infer. That tells me who could buy from us. What Bombora tells us is who is in market for what we're selling right now, meaning who is surging on our keywords. And our keywords in my world might be budgeting and forecasting, closing consolidation, analytics and reporting, modeling, and it's multiple people within multiple accounts that are searching for those phrases. They might even be searching for my own name, not my name, Nick Ezzo, but Host Analytics. If they're searching for Host Analytics, they'll show up in a Bombora report, and they will be more likely to engage with us. Does that answer your question? Perfect. Who's next? All right, right behind.
I have two questions, actually.
You only get one. Okay.
Kind of everything the company has revenue.
Pipeline. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Us too.
So, and I'm curious, you mentioned only depth and breadth and didn't discuss revenue type,
right,
opportunities, anything like that.
Yeah. So we also measure ourselves on, you know, how many, I have a report that runs every week that says what's the engagement interaction with our ABM list, but then once a quarter I pull a report that says how many of our ABM list did we drag across the finish line. And so we do measure that. In fact, in my company, our demand gen team is exactly measured in the same way as the sales team, which in our world is a stage two opportunity. In Serious Decisions world, that would be called a sales accepted lead. So if a sales rep decides he or she wants to work on something and be scrutinized by his or her manager every week, that I count that as a victory. So although we measure MQLs, we measure stage ones, that's all fine and good, but only to the degree that it's an indicator, a leading indicator of stage twos coming. So we do measure that. I probably should have another slide. I could have a whole slide on reporting and measuring. We could talk for hours on that. What's your other question?
My other question is, at a previous company, one of the techniques that was used was instead of just sending out the gift, whether it be a $50 Amazon gift card or whatever, that the person had to agree to a face-to-face meeting. And I'm curious what you think about having an offer, value offer, where there's a contingency, they have to do something to get it.
Okay, so the question is, how do we feel about sending out a swag device or putting an offer out there that you have to do something in order to get that thing? The best example is, we're gonna send you, you know, a remote control for the drone, but we're only going to give you the drone.
If you are the box,
or, you know, a golf driver, and we're not going to send you the head, or we're going to send you something else. I'm going to speak purely from opinion here. This is not data driven at all. This is my opinion, which I rarely do. I think it's stupid. I think it just irritates me, and it creates cognitive dissonance, and it creates a quid pro quo that I'm only going to do this if you do this back for me. For me, it's much more altruistic to send that mug. Whether you like the mug or not, I hope you enjoy your cup of coffee. You know, send something to somebody. And by the way, they don't have to take the meeting with me. If that mug is sitting on their desk, my CEO says the most important real estate, the most expensive real estate in the world is their desk. And if they're sitting there drinking out of that mug and they hate their life because budgeting sucks and they think about who to call, I want them to look at that mug that's in their hand and go, hey, Host Analytics. I probably should put the phone number on the mug. Damn it. All right, other questions? Yes.
So our clients are from 10 to 50 million. Your MarTech stack is more than their budget. So
10 to 50 million.
In revenue.
Okay. That's your customers that you're selling into. Okay.
Yeah. So in your stack, like, what are like one or two things that you consider like the most important or valuable assets outside of the marketing automation platform?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, good question. So the question is, if you're a small company, you don't have a huge MarTech budget, you know, what's the most important pieces of that previous slide that we should care about and we might want to throw in there? Obviously, you took my first answer, which is, you know, marketing automation. You got to have that. You know, it's and whether you use Marketo or Pardot or HubSpot, doesn't matter. Whatever your needs are, they're all fine products for different uses. I subscribe to something called the onion core philosophy, which means before you start to do everything in all the layers of the onion, like nail the core, nail the things that you're good at. Don't expand that until you've really locked down on these things and made sure that those were solid. So in this list, I think you have to have good data. And you don't have to have every data source like I have. Pick a good one. You know, one of my personal favorites, if I have to choose one off here, is InsideView. I also love ZoomInfo. They're in the next room. ZoomInfo has a pretty sophisticated way of getting direct dial phone numbers. So those are both very good. Some of these at the top are more like nice to have, but you also need to have some kind of attribution model because you can't manage what you can't measure. And you know, how do you know it's working or not? So whether it's using Marketo, using one of these other analytics tools, you have to be able to, you have to have somebody who's the navigator to look out the front of the boat to see what's going on. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Cool. Are we wrapping up? We have time for one more question? One more question, okay. Yeah, we do. So the question is, do we have a threshold? Do we just, you know, latch on to anybody who looks in our direction and breathes? Or do we have some kind of a threshold? And by the way, we were doing that 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Like anybody who would click on an email, hey, I noticed you clicked on an email. It's like, no. So I think we've got away from the worst practices and try to do best practices. So in addition to infer lead scoring, demographic and firmographic leads, lead scoring, so A's, B's, and C's, we also overlay a behavioral component on top of that, and we've set a threshold. It's an arbitrary number, but it's 50 in our world. Maybe it's 100 in your world. And you have to either do one really big action, like download a high-quality bottom-of-funnel asset, like a white paper or a Gartner report, or you've accumulated enough little actions to reach 50 points, in which case the SDR will reach out to you. And by the way, the SDR follow-up is key because they don't always like go for the jugular to take the meeting. Sometimes they just say, hey, look, my name's Nick. I'm the SDR who's assigned to your account. Consider me to be your tour guide, your Sherpa on your journey as you're learning about finance automation. Please give me a ring if you have any questions. And just putting your name out there, sending your email with contact information, that's, people like to buy things people don't like to be sold to. And of course, we all know about the dark funnel. 80%, or if you believe Serious Decisions, 67% of the buyer journey takes place in the dark, unknown to us. So we try to be pretty hands-off and not go for the meeting right away. We try to just be that trusted advisor to help them along the way. Does that make sense? Okay, cool. We're out of time. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that was great. Right. Thank you, Nick. I told you. It was great. Hang on, guys. So we've got until 4:10. We're going to have a panel.